The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and here we are. Welcome back. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of March. Tomorrow, probably the 4th. Although the way things are going in the world, you never know. It would only take an hour, and things would be irrevocably changed, as they say. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, just tune in and watch Dr. Strangelove. I suggest you purchase it and watch it several times. It's an absolutely brilliant masterpiece of a film. George Filer is standing by down in Florida again, and coward, can't take the cold, eh, George?
Right. I like it warm, not cold like it is up in the Northeast.
Cold? It's worse than cold. It's absurd. I mean, we're talking, I get reports from people I know back there, and if you had stayed home... But seriously, it's horrible. It's just horrible. Yes. People in Virginia and all the way up north to New England, in the Midwest, it doesn't matter. It's just amazing.
I know. Talk to my friend in Maine. He's got 7 feet of snow.
Seriously?
Right. Can't even get the car out of the garage. You know, so much snow. And, of course, Boston is bad. It's,
yeah.
The
Boston
Northeast is a tough...
Yeah. Boston had an all-time record, I think, something like that. There have been a number of records set. So, I mean,
hundreds, really.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah. Yeah, crazy. So, this has probably cut down on reports from the Northeast, I would guess.
It has. It's too big a thing.
Yeah.
Digging out of the snow and fighting the cold and all that.
Well, you know, this other thing about people getting out and digging through the snow and having heart attacks is true. And I don't know why it is unless people are really in that bad a shape that they can't. I mean, seriously, if you just pace yourself, it seems to me you can just, well, unless you're in bad shape, I don't know. But if you folks are in a snow, serious snow situation... we hear this every year, so do be careful. You can overdo it, so just go slowly.
And it's also the combination of the cold as well as the actual you know, exercise you're doing. So it isn't easy.
No, it's not. And I just can't even imagine what it must be like on some of those old roofs on houses. Seriously, you get frozen snow. I don't know how... moisture dense the snow is, but it can be very heavy. Do you have homes, roofs crashing and collapsing and breaking where you are?
Well, you hear of them, yes. Not frequently, but, you know, it does happen. There's just a lot of weight in that snow, and it can get very heavy, particularly as it gets warmer and, you know, it absorbs a lot of water, but it's holding it. I heard some figures that were astounding.
Like?
Thousands of pounds of weight.
Oh, per square inch or something, yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting thing to contemplate, and there's another thing I'm going to see if I can look up here in a minute. But we do have, if you look at headlines, George Filer's most recent editions, number 6, number 7, and number 8, and I guess number 9 will come out tomorrow, as it usually does on Wednesday. I'm going to have to move you to Wednesday. I don't know.
Right. Well, it usually comes out, but I write it on Wednesday, but my webmaster doesn't usually send it out until Thursday.
Hmm. Okay, well, what do you want to do here first? We got three issues to look at. And they're always full of good things.
Well,
let's see. I'm looking something up here right now. That's why I'm not talking too much. I want to find this. That's a very interesting statistic.
One of the things is that...
Oh, here it is.
This snow, as long as we're talking about it, and this cold air is coming across from Siberia, and the weather patterns are very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Vietnam, which is in 1968,
mm-hmm.
we could do a lot of things to the weather, and that was a long time ago. And, you know, we could make it rain on the various roads, and
mm-hmm.
the Soviets and the Chinese have advanced in weather control, and there's some speculation that with HAARP-type facilities that you
yeah.
can change the weather in the United States. And right now, Putin obviously is rather upset with us. The Russians are upset with us, you know.
Yeah, but I... No... Don't think
well, in
that.
In any case,
we're able
might
to do
be
plenty
involved
of
in a weather war.
Yeah, well,
I think we are. I'm saying this is a possibility.
Well, you know, we could look at the assassination of Boris Nemtsov, and the next day, one of our military weather satellites suffered a sudden and extreme rise in internal temperature and blew up. Into, I think they said 80 major pieces. Now that could have been, if you want to be conspiratorial, a little bit of a revenge or a calling card. We can take your satellites down anytime we want, so you better stop it. You're an Air Force man, what would cause a satellite to suddenly heat up to the extent that it would explode after being in orbit for 20 years and working perfectly? So I doubt it. Anyway, yeah.
I don't know if it would be something internal.
No, I doubt it, too. It could have been another satellite up there, a weapon. It could have been something from the ground. It could have been something from an airplane, laser. Who knows? But we did see that Russian rocket launch. Oh, it's got to be 8 or 9 months ago now, which clearly was shot right through with a beam weapon. Clearly. You could see it. Go right through the side of the rocket, and then the rocket blew up. This is after, I think, the second stage had separated. So that was that video is up there. There's just no doubt about what it was. A weapon of some kind took that rocket down. It was a Russian rocket.
There's advanced weapons that obviously they're not releasing information on, you know, lasers and even advanced weapons of various kinds. And three or four nations are building them, and whether they choose to use them or not is, you know, anybody's guess.
Here's that stat I was looking for. You talked about the weight of snow, a snow load on a roof, which was, what'd you say, 200 pounds per square inch, something like that? I don't know
the exact
Okay.
Amount, but it's very significant. It's enough to collapse some roofs.
Measured in pounds per square inch, listen to this, George, you're going to like this. An automobile has a load of between 28 and 30 pounds per square inch. An elephant carries a load of between 50 and 100 pounds of weight per square inch on whatever it's standing on. Now, here's the kicker. A 125-pound woman in high heels, when she takes a step and the high heel is on the floor, exerts over 2,000 pounds per square inch. 2,000. An elephant is 50. What do you mean you know you've been walked on?
No, I put down a floor on my porch of cedar.
And you saw all the round holes in it. It's, yeah.
So my had my daughter's wedding there. And
surprise.
All the little holes in the newly put down cedar porch. In any case, it is tremendously strong, even in a fairly light, woman.
Right. I know, it's 2,000 PSI, 125 pounds of human being, and those heels come down into such a vectored downward thrust that 2,000 pounds per square inch. That's really amazing. I wouldn't want to get stepped on at all by one of those.
It's an effective tool to use in a fight.
Yeah, it would. It would be. Okay. I got to get rid of that screen and go back to this screen. And we're going to take a look and see what we've got. Filer's Files, by the way, is the world's foremost weekly UFO ET. And it's really a lot of interesting history as well. George always has historical vignettes of people, incidents, and so forth. So if we go to issue number 6, just for fun, and let's start with 6. Now, you've changed the look of your newsletter a little bit. Okay. You have a special on Gerald Ford, who asked for a congressional investigation of UFOs. Was he doing that tongue-in-cheek, or was he serious?
Well, I think he was serious. Interestingly, I wrote him a letter.
Yeah, we talked about this. Tell the story. It's a great story. Good story.
Well, it was kind of like a friend of a friend knew him, had done some favor for him. In any case, I was able to get his personal address. This is after he retired. But I, asked him. I was very interested in the fact that he had asked for congressional hearings on the UFOs. There had been some sightings in Michigan and a lot of controversy at the time. This is back in the 60s, I think. But in any case, he had asked for congressional hearings, which I'm not sure they ever acted. They did have hearings, but not at the time that he requested them. And so I wrote him a letter and asked him what he knew about UFOs and, if he could tell me, I'd appreciate it. And he said, well, when he was in Congress, because of all these sightings by people in Michigan, they were calling him, he asked for the information to investigate UFOs, but he also asked the powers that be, the Air Force and government people, to explain, what was happening with UFOs. And he was not given any kind of an answer, at least that he felt was, effective. Any case, he said that when he became vice president, he also asked about UFOs. And later, as the president of the United States, he asked about UFOs. And according to him, they never gave him any kind of a satisfactory answer anywhere in the government. And he signed it at the bottom, so I assume he was telling the truth. That even the presidents are kept out of the loop on occasion. And I think that's a significant factor in all of this. That many of the presidents apparently are not given access to that information.
Correct. They're not deemed worthy. We remember that Bill Clinton sent Webster Hubble over to, I guess, the DOD, and, you know, said, go get the story. I want to know. Jimmy Carter tried. I don't think he had any luck either. Of course, he saw one of his own. You're quite right. And it's not considered for the public sector. It's military. National defense. Did you see the 30-second film clip of the alleged Roswell ET being carried into the hangar there at Roswell Army Air Force Base in the daylight? The film is overexposed. It's part of this slide thing that's coming out, but the film looks very realistic. The cameraman, whoever it is, it's black and white, of course, acts very excited the way he approaches. There are people standing all around. The stretcher is put on the ground, and the dead ET is laying on it. It's very interesting. It doesn't look staged. It's crummy film, but there are some few seconds here and there where things are in relative proper exposure, and you can see the ET, if that's what it is. Did you see that?
I saw the close-up of the face that I believe Jaime Maussan has.
Right. Well, I mean, this is film, like 30
right.
seconds worth.
I haven't seen the film.
Oh, I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. You got to take a look at that. Because having been I've shot a lot of film and video, and it just has the feeling of someone who's around a situation that is so bizarre and so unusual. He's not steady with the camera. Not that he's shaking or trembling, but I mean, he's moving it all around, trying to get around Mr. X, Y, and Z, so he can get a better look at the corpse on the stretcher. And it's definitely period stuff. It's an old stretcher, World War II vintage-looking stretcher, and it's right outside the open hangar at Roswell. Daylight.
Well, Edgar Mitchell, you know, grew up in Roswell.
Yeah.
He was the sixth man to walk on the moon as an astronaut. So he said that a number of people came to him who had lived in Roswell and had seen, you know, the bodies and the craft and all that kind of thing, and frankly convinced him that it was real. And I learned a little trick in the Air Force that if you really want to find out information, a good person to call is the wife of very important people.
There you go. Or the town town beautician.
In any case, I called Mrs. Ramey, who General Ramey was head of the, I think it was 8th Air Force, but he was the overall commander of Roswell and the other bases in the area. And I talked to her, and she said, well, I prefer not to tell you, in effect, that if Roswell was real, but I will tell you that my husband, General Ramey, was very upset about the fact that he had to lie about them being balloons. I don't know if people are familiar with the story, but first it came out that there was a crash of a disc near Roswell.
Uh-huh.
And the Army Air Force was investigating and so on. And it was played very as real. And then they decided to change the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she confirmed that her husband was very upset about the fact that he had to lie, which I thought was interesting. And she said, you know, we became very good friends with President Truman. And I said, now that's very unusual that a one-star general
mm-hmm.
becomes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. very friendly with the President of the United States.
I get what you're saying.
And that they had had dinners together and that kind of thing, and he was promoted to 3 stars, and he was, as far as they were concerned, he was going to be head of the Air Force because of, like, some of these friendships and so on, and what he had known about Roswell, et cetera. And unfortunately, he had a heart attack and passed away. But mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that I'm getting the story from, you know, important people that had something to do with this, that I think it was a real situation. And this movie that you're describing would also indicate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks real to me. And it's not that I want to believe. It just looks real to me from a perspective of, a professional filmmaker and videographer. I've just done too many years of it. Anyway, it's got quite an interesting view to it when you consider the people walking around. Some are in uniform, some are in civilian clothes. And anyway, I'll find it and send it to you here. I had it posted. I think I posted it twice. It's very interesting. You do need to see that. Okay,
you probably covered about John Podesta.
Yeah, well, Podesta said, if I can just summarize it and kind of paraphrase him, that the one thing he regrets when he was in office, serving in the administration, was that he did not bring out the ET truth, what we know. Tell me more about it. How do you read,
well,
John?
People don't realize that through the years he's actually given talks, you know, saying that they're real and so on, been to the National Press Club given open talks saying, UFOs are real, aliens visit us, et cetera. And recently he's been working for Obama. First he was worked for Clinton for many years, and now he was working for Obama. And interestingly enough, he's changed jobs. He just, resigned from working for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to be handling Hillary Clinton's election.
Right.
So there's a man in, right near the top people in the country for many years, and he's a believer, and he said it open on many occasions. So I'm sure he knows a lot more than we do, but he was always in the right place and a very powerful
position. Well, he's making no bones about it that we have been visited. We have machines, we have bodies, and we have been contacted. I guess he's just, for some reason, nobody will give him much airtime. He's really not given any major media airtime that I've seen, not much, occasionally.
You would think it would be on the national news.
Of course. It would be a huge story.
And here's on the Jess Brent Show.
Yeah, I'd be happy to have him on. All right, George, hold on.
He was President Clinton's chief of staff, which oftentimes is the most powerful position in the country.
That's correct. But not a word. All right, we'll be right back with George in just a couple minutes. Hang on. George in Florida having a good time. Glad to see that. And we will continue. Okay, and we're back with George Filer. George, of course, the director of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, or MUFON, however you'd like to do it. I guess if you're a cat lover, you'll pronounce it the second way. If you like cows, you'll say it the first way. Do you like that, George?
Right.
MUFON?
Not as good as any.
MUFON. All right. What is the formal correct way to pronounce it? I guess there really isn't one. Unless you're from off planet.
Usually I've heard MUFON.
And cat lovers.
UFO Network. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the organization, but I think there's some 4,000 members, and many of them are retired military, retired government.
Right.
Chief of police, any place where you might say frequently hear or see about UFOs, sightings.
Now, you have another story in issue number 7. It's a very interesting story. See, George cites historical reasons for his statements about UFOs. Admiral Lord Hill Norton, Hill-Norton, to be precise, is a very interesting man. He was a major figure in the last century, and George has printed a statement from him. He was the chief of defense staff, Ministry of Defense, Great Britain, in 1973. He was the chairman of the Military Committee of NATO, 1974-77. Okay? Let me read this statement. Then we'll get George to comment a little bit more about Lord Hill Norton. The evidence that there are objects which have been seen in our atmosphere and even on terra firma that cannot be accounted for either as man-made objects or as any physical force or effect known to our scientists seems to me to be overwhelming. A very large number of sightings have been vouched for by persons whose credentials to me are unimpeachable. It is striking that so many have been trained observers, such as police officers and airline and military pilots. Their observations have, in many instances, been supported either by technical means, such as radar, or even more convincingly by interference with electrical apparatus of one sort or another. It's just one statement that Lord Hill Norton made. There have been others high-ranking in the British military over the years who have said things very provocative. Tell us more, George.
Well, Timothy Good is a writer, and one of the best books I think ever written was Above Top Secret by him.
Yeah.
In any case,
right.
Admiral Norton actually put that in the beginning of the book. But I didn't know him personally, but Timothy Good did, and I know Timothy pretty well, and he assured me that, you know, Lord Hill Norton was very interested in the subject and had known people of, Earl Mountbatten, who was also,
Lord Mountbatten was another major figure in the last century. And tell us about him.
Well, he was in charge of all British and Australian troops in Asia. He was equivalent to General MacArthur. And after the war, he was the last viceroy from England to India, and in a sense ran India, you know, was the leader of India until they became, you know, a separate country. In any case, he spoke openly, so to speak, that he had seen UFOs and that many of his men with him had seen that, it was no big secret or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, matter of fact, even in his autobiography, he tells about the fact that the UFO landed on his property. Now, he does not admit that he saw it personally at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But that some of his people that worked for him that he trusted had seen the UFOs landing. Point is that if you start checking around, and particularly tell people that, you know, I've seen a UFO or I saw something that might be a UFO, and you kind of like open the conversation, then people are more willing to tell you what they saw. Now, I was just down in the Keys in Marathon in a fish fry. Sounds funny, but the fellow who caught about 80% of the fish was this fellow named Cameron. And I mentioned to him that, you know, I was interested in UFOs. He lit up, you know, he was all excited. And he said, you know, I'm from Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. We see him up there all the time. He said, not only that, people don't realize, but Nova Scotia came out and publicly explained, you know, as a province, that UFOs exist.
I didn't hear that. That's not a surprise, but I had heard that. What about the Defense Secretary, Secretary of Defense for all of Canada, Paul Hellyer, is another one. Now, this is just like our John. Look, well, let's imagine if our Secretary of Defense made a statement like Paul Hellyer made. I mean,
I talked to him personally, and he's very open about it.
Yeah.
And he's a very nice man. He's very intelligent, you know, to hold that kind of position. He's also some kind of, like the Canadian connection to the Queen. In other words, he holds a very high position, even now, that people are not very aware of. To the Queen of England.
Right.
So I'm driving from Marathon to St. Augustine and meeting up with my old Air Force buddies.
Yeah.
Who now a captain, a sheriff, you know, he's pretty important position up in St. Augustine. Just retired, but he's been out to many cases where people were, you know, investigating UFOs. Matter of fact, he didn't particularly believe in them, but as I'm talking to him, I think he's getting more interest. Well, we go out with some of their best friends, and we bring up the fact that UFOs exist. And this lady says, well, I saw one, you know, just a short time ago, she said it looked like a steamship. Some of these old paddle wheel steamships. Not sure I've seen a UFO that looks like that.
That's a pretty wild description.
But it has all these lights on it, and it's kind of a squarish looking thing. And, not only did she see it, but many of her friends. The point is, when you start checking around and just are open about the fact that UFOs may exist, it's amazing how many people start telling you about their own stories.
Yeah, it is. Hold on, George. We have to pause. We'll come right back and continue our conversation with Major George Filer in just a couple minutes. Okay, and back with George Filer, who is playing it cool down in Florida. Okay, in number 7 we have black triangular-shaped objects mentioned, and that's where I saw the Lord Hill Norton story.
Right, well, there's plenty of...
And lots of pictures and stories and all kinds of things, yeah. Now, we have a couple of pictures of black triangles that are very impressive, but we still don't have that, you know, and it kind of doesn't matter, because if somebody did get a perfect picture, fully resolved and nice and tight digital focus, people would say immediately, especially government disinformation hacks, would say, it's a fraud, it's a fake, anybody can make that, and yeah, a lot of people can make them. So we're kind of messed up now because we're in the digital age when anything can be faked or duplicated. So it's going to be difficult to prove anything with either video or still digital imagery anymore. There's some really good pictures in this issue. It's fun to watch them. Let me also remind everyone, you can get a free subscription to Major Filer's Filer's Files every week, sent to your email box, no charge whatsoever. He doesn't even ask for donations, although I'll ask for him. If you can help out a little bit, please do, because he's providing this as just a remarkable public service, something the government should be doing, but we know that game. So if you just want the issues, try them out. Write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, Star, S-T-A-R, Major Star at Verizon.net, and tell him you heard him here and you'd like to please get a subscription, and he'll be happy to sign you up. They're really nicely produced, very informative, and I value them greatly. Okay, what's next, sir?
Well, they can see them on your website or mine at the National UFO Center.com.
Yep.
And see if they'd like to receive it. It's that simple.
Then get any simpler. Okay.
Well, there's a lot going on, and we never... Well, one thing is that the average person may or may not believe in all this. But if he's interested, he can become a field investigator for MUFON. And
right.
He can write me or just go to...
Did you see the lights? Before I forget, did you see the lights on Sirius, the little mini planet?
Yes, I did see that.
That's that's pretty strange. Pretty strange. I think a lot of you listening saw it as well. Tell us about that too. I don't know if you've written about it, but it's very interesting.
Well, the fact is that there's lots of mini planets, if you want to call them that, or asteroids out in space, particularly off from Mars and Jupiter. It's almost like a planet blew up one time in the past or something.
I think it has to be. There's a belt, the asteroid belt, that looks like the debris of a blown planet. I don't really think of anything else that would fit in there. The case of the mysterious lights on the dwarf planet Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. This was a story picked up in Newsweek. Rather a shocking picture when you look at it.
Right. Looks like there's cities or something down there.
Well, there's... It's
at least two lights.
Yeah, in a big crater, there are two white lights, big lights. These are not small. And Newsweek picked it up and covered it. It's one of the... Newsweek, let me read this interesting. It's one of the oldest questions to plague humanity. Are we alone in the universe? And I would say, let's hope to God we aren't. Nobody knows the answer for now, says Newsweek, but yes, they do know the answer. But something weird is out there, namely a pair of very strange, shiny spots on the dwarf planet Ceres. Even NASA is, quote, puzzled. CNET, CNET, reports that NASA's Dawn spacecraft, which has been studying objects in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter since 2007, has detected not one but two mystery lights as it drifts closer and closer to Ceres. The frozen and rocky dwarf planet discovered in 1801 is the largest space object lying between Mars and Jupiter's orbit. On Friday, NASA released a statement confirming that the spacecraft had detected the appearance of peculiar bright spots on the dwarf planet's surface. Recent NASA photographs show two lights, one luminous and another slightly dimmer, becoming smaller and brighter as the spacecraft approaches Ceres orbit. We expected to be surprised, but we did not expect to be this puzzled, said Principal Dawn Mission Scientist Chris Russell in the same statement. So it's wild. One of the lights was spotted from quite far away, 83,000 kilometers, and the second from 46,000 kilometers from the planet itself. And every time I look at that picture, I say, come on, what is this?
Also, if you look at the picture, you're seeing like the side of this asteroid that's about 950 kilometers in diameter. And inside of a crater are these lights. The brighter light looks squarish, and the other one looks more in a triangular shape.
Right. Well, that could be a pixelation thing too. I don't know. I don't know.
Possible, but I think the fact that they said they don't know what it is indicates it's not pixelation. The other thing about it is that the way it's positioned inside the crater makes the sun's reflection on
almost impossible, correct?
Right, right. Very unlikely.
Yeah.
Consequently, you have, you know, is this some kind of an alien space station with lights? Why is it lit up, very bluntly? Now, people are not aware of the fact, but there's through hundreds of years, there's been recordings of lights on the moon and movement of lights on the moon.
Oh, a lot of strange things on the moon over the observable things over the last several centuries recorded
even
by
clouds,
people.
You know.
Yeah, even clouds or
even,
some kind of
even
vapor.
Even recorded by priests and so on. I mean, you know, people that and astronomers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all questioning what there's about. I did ask Edgar Mitchell. I know him a little bit.
Yeah, you know him, sure.
And what he thought it was all about.
What did he say?
Well, he said, you know, we signed a contract in the fact that we will not talk about, you know, UFOs and aliens and all that kind of stuff. But
right.
That's just out of what we're allowed to do. And he said, when I went to the moon, I didn't see anything. And I said, well, you know, I believe it. He said, but all my friends did. All my friends saw things on the moon.
That's what he said?
That's what he said.
That's a pretty funny way to dance around it. I didn't see anything, but all my friends did. That's funny.
And he's coming out more and more lately.
Yeah, yeah. It's time to end this stupid cover-up. It's just silly. Unfortunately, there are a lot of hoaxes out there, but they're not all hoaxes. And that's just the way it is.
Well, I've found in my experience in investigating that there's very few hoaxes, except for a group of kids who are about 17 or 18 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the average... I don't know what it is about that age, you know. They're smarter than everybody else, or they feel they are, or whatever. But in any case, I've had several in that age bracket. But, you know, you get a 50-year-old man or a 30-year-old woman, you know, why hoax? What is the gain?
Mm-hmm.
And the average person goes online to report it, the sighting. By the way, we had over 600 sightings last month.
In this kind of winter weather, where were most of the sightings?
Well, they tended to be in better areas like California and Florida, mm-hmm. and so on. But the fact is that it's still a fairly large number. And, of course, some are overseas as well, Australia, India, Great Britain, Canada. Pretty much anywhere in the world, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually fairly sophisticated people. And they make a report, and usually takes 20 or 30 minutes, you know, to write it up and so on.
Sure.
And then we send out our field investigators, so if we can get there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's just phone calls, but in any case, people might be interested in becoming an investigator. It's not too much different than being an investigator for the FBI or the, you know, the local police department or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And we're always looking for those kind of people. We have...
And the pay is extraordinary.
Right. Well, we feel that we're dealing with probably the most important situation that exists on our planet. These could very bluntly be enemies that are going to destroy Earth. It's unlikely because they haven't done it.
Right.
But
well, they certainly
they
could
have a lot of excellent information that they can provide to us. If they can reach here from other planets or from under the ocean or wherever, they certainly have technology that's far in advance of anything that we have, and that we can learn from them. Hopefully, we can learn not to have all these crazy wars and fix our planet up environmentally. As a matter of fact, that's what they seem to be telling us.
Well, it's a little late, I'm afraid, to repair most of the damage, unless there was some incredible reversal of our entire species and its dedication to the planet, which I just don't see happening right now. I hope I'm wrong. George, thank you for being here as always. Talk to you next month, if not before, and you have a wonderful time down there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good night, my friend.
Well, it is wonderful, folks. It's nice and warm.
See? Bye-bye. All right, George. Okay, there he goes. Major George Filer, U.S. Air Force retired. And if you, again, would like a free subscription to Filer's Files, it's really a very nice thing to get. Even if you don't believe it, doesn't matter. It's fun to read it. Just write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, star, Major star, at Verizon.net and tell him you heard him here and you'd like a subscription. He'll do it. And we'll be right back with hour number two in just a few minutes.